Good morning, everyone. I'm Ashanaya Swami, and we're continuing our morning broadcast. So let's start with a prayer. Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, Friend, Beloved God, Jesus Christ, Babaji Krishna, Lahiri Mahashaya, Swami Sri Yukteswar, Beloved Master Paramhansa Yogananda, Saints of all religions, dearest friend Swami Kriyananda, humbly we bow to you all. Inspire us with your loving presence. Give us an actual experience of your closeness to us, that all our ideas and beliefs will be translated into realization. We long to live in thy light. Open the window to divine consciousness and lift us through it with your grace. Om, peace. Amen. Yesterday I was talking about the yugas, and I was talking about soul's personal evolution in the context of the yugas, and it made me think about another template that is extremely helpful. I think with a lot of us, at least being home a great deal of the time, whether we're working from home or not, we still sort of have a different rhythm to our life. And it gives us the opportunity, one hopes, to be more observant, to be more introspective, to be more conscious of small things, because we're not living in so much outward activity as we normally do. So one of the templates that is very, very helpful for spiritual understanding is actually the caste system. Now, of course, if you don't understand the caste system from the point of view the way Yogananda taught it and Swamiji explained it, that doesn't make any sense to you. I mean, India's been cursed with the caste system. Master says every country has its particular kind of misery, and the caste system in India has been that misery. It's been a way of social oppression. Now they're trying to balance all of that, but it became a rigid form that people were held to, and they were held down or elevated regardless of merit on the basis of inherited position. So that has nothing to do with what I'm talking about, because in a higher age, and I was talking about the yugas yesterday, in a higher age, the caste system was not hereditary and it was not rigid. It was a way of understanding where a person was standing spiritually, and therefore then what would be their next step. Because oftentimes, I'm sure you've noticed in these broadcasts, we'll be talking about a particular kind of behavior. But when I'm trying to analyze it or make suggestions or respond to questions about particular kinds of behavior, it's not the behavior, it's what consciousness is at the heart causing the behavior. That's what we have to work with. So the original caste system was about consciousness. And it was, well, these are characteristics of certain stages of consciousness. These are the pitfalls. This would be your next step. So when Swami Kriyananda in 1979 created something he called the superconscious living system, which was a way of trying to take all of this esoteric Indian-oriented teaching and put it into plain language that Westerners could understand, he took a great many of the, he took all the principles from self-realization his master taught it, but basically took the Sanskrit out of it, and so that it could be a universal culture. So in the course of that, the caste system was also part of it, and we developed a way of talking about the caste system that referenced the Indian way, but that could be understood without it. So the four castes fall like this: morally asleep, self-centered, truth-seeking, and truth-sharing. And no one fits neatly into any one category, and until we're fully realized and all of our subconscious tendencies have been resolved and we live only by attunement with God's light. But prior to that, all of us oscillate among these. And in certain areas, we're truth sharing, and in other areas, we're morally asleep. And on Monday, we're morally asleep. And on Thursday, we're merely self-centered. We've risen to the point of being self-centered. And in between, you know, just for a few minutes, we were seeking the truth. So don't try to say, this is me. You don't get a t-shirt that says, I'm morally asleep or whatever it is. But when we're watching ourselves, paying attention to our behavior, if we can think about what is motivating me in this moment, and the obvious question is, how can I elevate it? Because until we're self-realized, there's always a way to elevate it. So inherent in this, in the description of this, is also what I've referenced before, which is subconscious. I always put subconscious on the left. I don't know why. But subconscious on the left, superconscious here. And I don't think left or right really matters. It's just my habit. Subconscious is everything that we already know. This is the way we're defining it in this context. Subconscious is everything we've already accomplished, everything we already know, all the stored, whether conscious or below consciousness, subconsciousness, memories of everything we've already done. Failures and successes, you know, positive and negative, but it's already accomplished. And therefore, no creative energy is required to perpetuate it. We just keep rolling along. You know, I don't like cheese. I've never liked cheese. I don't like dogs. I'm a cat person. It's just like, boom, that's who I am. I watched this little girl. I was in an athletic club, and I happened to be sitting in the hot tub. There was a woman there, and her daughter was there. Her daughter was about 7. And the woman said, I've never seen her before or since. You know, jacuzzis are okay, but I prefer the dry heat of a sauna. She said it just about like that. And her little daughter looked at her mommy, sort of looked at us and said, I prefer the dry heat of a sauna. I saw that little girl, you know, she's 18 and her girlfriend says, let's go over to the place, you know, and sit in the jacuzzi. Oh, I prefer the dry heat of a sauna. Like that. Her husband wants to put a jacuzzi in the backyard. You're always doing what you want. I prefer the dry heat of a sauna. You know, she wouldn't even know where she got it. It's just, that'll be who she is. And she's just going to darn well cling to it. And that's just going to be it. Well, that's the epitome of the subconscious mind. Even if it's positive, it's only as good as I already am. The superconscious holds our infinite potential. And of course, it takes more energy to rise to it. The subconscious screams and clings. The superconscious whispers. Come on, you can do more than that. But in order to do more than that, I have to try harder. I have to put out more energy. And the subconscious says, oh, you're fine, just as you are. So this is the battle we're always fighting. So as we progress through these four stages of spiritual awakening, which have been called the CAS, these stages of spiritual awakening, it requires an increase. Because to be a truth sharer, which is the Brahmin caste, which is a priest, we have to rise to that level. You can't be morally asleep and share truth. You have to progress the distance. That's what the spiritual path is. There isn't enough time here for me to really go into each one of these really deeply. I believe in various classes I've done it, but honestly, I don't know how you'd find it. Karma, reincarnation, personal and planetary evolution, because it's a fascinating subject. Superconscious living itself. So let's start just getting a picture. Morally asleep. Now, in the Indian system, this would be called a shudra. And a shudra means a peasant. Now, you must understand when I say peasant, which I'm going to say peasant, merchant, soldier, king, and priest. That's just a simple way of defining it because the caricature of each one of those positions in society matches the qualities. But you can have a Brahmin who functions in life as a peasant. And you can have a soldier king who's an absolute shudra because their values are shudra values. So just to have that clear. So a shudra is a peasant because it's a person who identifies almost completely with subconsciousness. And I have characteristics for each one. They're most identified with matter. A Shudra just sees the physical world as the real world. If you're morally asleep, it's just what you see is what you get. You don't think about values. You don't think about directions. It just is what it is. And a Shudra person, a person who's morally asleep, just reacts. You know, whatever happens, they just react. Why do you treat me that way? Somebody you don't like, you punch them. You know, just, there's no reflection. And a Shudra works almost entirely. Well, let me just say this, the difference. A Shudra person is interested in life through the senses. They live in their lower nature. Their experience is almost entirely physical. I mean, you meet people like that. You see people like that all over the place. They don't read. They don't think. They don't inspire themselves. They just live through their bodies. And, you know, they can be, well, if they have any more refined nature, then they're not Shudras. But this is the nature of what a Shudra is. Now, understand, there's no judgment involved here. This is just the way it is. If we're evolving as individual jivas up from the animal level, well, it's just physical. An animal, you know what's going to happen? This is going to be two parts. I'm not going to be able to explain anything clearly enough. So I'm going to relax and stop glancing at the clock and realize that this is the caste system in you, part one, and tomorrow will be the caste system in you, part two. So today we probably won't get all the way to the Brahman. And if you want to know what it is to be a Brahmin, you'll have to tune in tomorrow. So now, when you're completely physical identified, matter is the only reality. These are people who say, well, when you die, you die. What difference does it make? You know, and such people are often very physically tough and often are somewhat indifferent to what happens to their body. Swami tells an anecdote about a man who worked in some in a more primitive area of the world. And he said sometimes the people would drink and get into fights. And he said, but they would come in with this remarkable indifference to the injuries they were carrying. He said, this doctor said, literally, a man came in holding his own intestines in because he'd been slashed with a knife. And he said to the doctor, stuff him back in and sew it up. Because there isn't this refined sense of self-awareness that makes you really protective. And if you think of Shudras really, literally, just evolving up from the animal level, where the physical body is just part of everything. But a Shudra can be more human than that. But they're very physical in the way that they see the world. And so the basic attitude of a Shudra is rather indifferent. You know, if you're a very refined person, you don't necessarily have that much association, but they don't have a lot of capacity to analyze their position and imagine a way to change it. See, that is when you begin to evolve up to the level of being self-centered, where you can think, I could do something to change my position. That requires a higher level of energy than merely to just accept what is. When we traveled in India, we stopped at a rest when we were on our way from Calcutta to, let's see, where would we have been going to, Puri. Is that what I mean? No. I think we were on our way to Orissa, right? We were on our way to the Jagannath temple. That's what it was. And we stopped at this, rest stop, and there was a man there selling peanuts, and the man had a cart that was a flat platform. And he got himself up onto the platform, and then he sat in this position with his knees up, sort of crouched. I can't do it because my knees won't do it anymore, but just stooping like this. He positioned himself like that. He had a big container of peanuts, and he would scoop them into these newspaper cones, and then he would sell them to you for 10 rupees. We were very careful at that time, especially about what we allowed our group to eat, but peanuts were good because they were in the shell and they were perfectly fine. So we all bought peanuts. The guy there just sold us peanuts. He was a merchant, but he was a Shudra through and through. He just sold us peanuts. And you could see, it's just like, he gets up in the morning, he sells peanuts, he goes home. And there wasn't even the thought in his mind even to be curious about who we were. He just sold us peanuts. Because his attitude toward life was more or less indifferent. You just do what you do. He suffered accordingly, but he didn't suffer the exquisite agonies that someone who can imagine another life for themselves and doesn't have it. My friend who was on that pilgrimage, who had heard that before you can be liberated, you have to experience anything, everything. She came to me and she said, "Do I have to be a peanut seller in Orissa?" I said, "No, I think you've already been a peanut seller in Orissa." But I said, "You have such a creative imagination with so many sense of the possible that the first thing you'd do is that you'd figure out how to decorate your cart. The next thing that you'd do is you'd figure out a more comfortable place to live, to sit. Then you would be very interested in everybody who came to you, and you would decide that that newspaper was ugly, and you would find another way to wrap them, because your mind is full of possibilities and of energy, because your consciousness is not morally asleep, a shudra. You're not thinking of, I mean, you're thinking of values and what you can give and many other things. It's not that the shudra wouldn't care about those. It simply doesn't occur to him because he's living in the subconscious. And so his attitude is one of indifference. And what motivates him to action is fear of punishment. Like, if he doesn't go out there and sell those peanuts, he won't eat. And so he has to go and sell his peanuts. He doesn't sell his peanuts because he wants the tourists to have peanuts. He sells it because if he doesn't, he won't eat. There's a negative consequence. Such people, you know, to motivate such people, this is a whole leadership issue too, to motivate such people, you have to threaten them. You can't inspire them with, "Oh, if we all work together, it will be easier for all of us." You have to say, "If you don't do your job, I'm going to fire you." Because that is the only understanding that a person of that consciousness has. Now, I am not a shudra by any stretch of the imagination, except sometimes when I have something to do, for example, that I really don't want to do, the only way I can motivate myself to do it is to tell myself what the terrible consequences will be if I don't. There's no idealism, there's no even self-interest in it, except the fear of punishment. The fear of punishment will get me to do it. And so sometimes in our lives, we have to treat ourselves like shudras because that's who we are. The response to suffering, see, these are the keys, the basic attitude toward life, the motivation, the response to suffering, and the nature of the relationships you have. See, these are the characteristics of each one. In the shudra, the morally asleep is basically indifferent. You're unhappy, too bad. I'm fine. You know, it's just like, and you get in relationships with people who shouldn't be shudras but are, and they're just indifferent. They don't care. Fear of punishment. Response to suffering is to avoid pain by dulling our awareness. And this is where all of us fall into the shudra consciousness a lot. Television, sugar, alcohol, drugs, sleep, you know, just all these things. We just dull our awareness. We don't like what's happening. I'm just going to make myself even duller so I don't have to think about it. Of course, it's no solution because as soon as that dullness wears off, whatever was causing the suffering was there. And this is how we grow, is that we realize the method we're using is not working. So once again, this is where shudra consciousness permeates us all. Rather than facing into something, rising our energy and transcending it, we just dull ourselves down. Now, sometimes that response is just fine because we can't, most of us can't be 120% all the time. But it's helpful if you say, "I'm going to be a shudra tonight. I'm going to watch 3 episodes of this Netflix series," whatever the heck it might be. That's what I understand everyone is doing, and I myself have done on occasion also. I don't want to paint everyone with a brush that I don't also paint myself, but I just do it consciously. I don't have the energy tonight. I don't have the will. I don't have the emotional stamina. I'm going to take the shudra's approach, and I'm just going to dull my consciousness. If it becomes habitual, spiritually, it's disastrous. Incarnations get thrown away. The relationships for a person who's on a shudra thing, attitude is parasitic. Basically, it's just self-involved. If my needs are met, what does it matter about yours? And so we also have to think in our minds, you know, where and when am I being a shudra and how is it serving me? Dulling my awareness. Okay, so that's the first attitude. The problem is, after a while, living as a shudra, there's an inner impulse toward expansion. You know, the seed wants to become a tree. The jiva wants to become a self-realized master. The river wants to find its way to the ocean. And as soon as the water emerges from the earth or falls to the earth as rain. Soon as it touches the earth, it tries to get to the sea. So no matter how circuitous the route, how slow or complicated, the drop of water is trying to get to the sea. So this superconscious just keeps calling us. It's our destiny. And so gradually we get bored being Shudras, really. And it just doesn't work. Here we go again. I can't stand it. So then it begins to occur to us that maybe there's something I can do about it. Maybe we see that, you know, that man is selling the peanuts. You know, I could have my own little cart. I could have my own little peanut cart instead of just sort of, you know, carrying the peanuts to him every day. I could sell the peanuts instead of just picking up the peanuts and carrying them. I could sit on the cart and sell the peanuts. I could put out more energy, and then I would get more for myself, and I would then get paid more, and I would have more. So the quality of someone who rises to the point of being self-centered compared to a Shudra is that they put out more energy, they're willing to be creative, they have a little bit more awareness, but everything they do it for themselves, for self-gain. So the characterization of it is a Vaishya. It's a merchant. A merchant will put out energy, and a merchant will provide you with a good product, but he won't give it to you. He'll only sell it to you. And he'll sell it to you for a price that he thinks it's fair. It's fair. I'll give it to you. You can have it, but this is what it's worth, and I'm not taking one rupee less. You know, that's just what it is. I laughed. I was traveling with a man who he's actually in his nature more elevated, but he expressed as a Vaishya. Let me put it differently. He understood business, and he always thought in terms of business, and he would pay what something was worth. And he was arguing with a rickshaw driver over one rupee, and he finally realized that he was arguing over one rupee, which at that point was about 12 cents. But it was just more, he would fall into that Vaishya attitude. Well, the real price is actually 3 rupees. I'm not going to pay you 4, because that was the set price. And the other guy was being a Vaishya back. Finally, he just gave him the rupee and walked away. But that's the merchant consciousness. This is what it's worth. This is what I'll pay. That's the end of it. Let's see. And the Vaishya is busy doing things. He's earning money. But the physical reality is still his focus. He's trying to build something in this world. He's not thinking in terms of ideals. He's just thinking in terms of what he can create. And he's not necessarily concerned with self-improvement, and he's not necessarily thinking about the meaning of life. He's not thinking about ideals. So now what happens a lot, and this is where the caste system is in this form, is so helpful in leadership, or in actually trying to accomplish anything. People who are kshatriyas, which I think we're going to talk about tomorrow, who are moved by idealism, will often try to persuade vaishyas that they ought to be moved by idealism. Example, you know, pesticides are bad for the planet. You shouldn't be manufacturing and selling pesticides. What do you mean? If I didn't do it, somebody else would do it. There's a lot of money to be made in it. People want it. Why shouldn't I make it? And then the idealistic person says, but it hurts the eagles. And he says, what do I care about the eagles? I have my family to feed. And he just takes the world as it is and moves through it like that. And if you want to motivate this person, you have to figure out how it's in his best interest to do it, because he's motivated by what benefits him. But he's willing to put out energy if there's something in it for him. So it's a big step up from the Shudra. The selfish millionaire is progressing from being just too lazy and indifferent even to put out energy to become a millionaire. At least the millionaire is out there being creative, making things happen. Even if he's only getting for himself, it's a progressive stage. Now, somebody who's very idealistic, if he turns back for self-interest, he's going backwards. If Gandhi had dropped his efforts to free India and realized, with the name and fame I have now, I could get so rich as an attorney, everybody would have thought it was a backward step for him. But if your drunk uncle, who's just been lying on the couch for the last 10 years, watching television and drinking beer, suddenly is inspired to go to law school and make a killing as a lawyer, you would think, hooray for him. It's just obvious. One is forward, one is backwards. It depends on where you stand. And that's how you begin to tell for yourself what's forward and what's backwards, and what is an appropriate next step. So if you know that you're just lazy and unmotivated and suddenly you want money, that's a good thing for you. Even if your friends might have higher ideals than you, you know that you will move because there's something in it for you. And we need to be honest enough to motivate ourselves for what will actually motivate us, instead of being embarrassed by who we actually are. We have to do what works. You have to become practical in this. So the basic attitude of the Vaishya is looking out for number one. And the basic question is, what's in it for me? Well, that sounds pretty good, but what's in it for me? You know, it's like a caricature, a movie caricature, but that's what it is. Okay, I've heard why you want it. How is it going to benefit me? But once I find out how it's going to benefit me, I'm going to put out a lot of creative energy to make it work, which is a spiritual quality, to put out creative energy. To put out creative energy only for my own benefit is not as elevated as doing it altruistically, but is better than not putting out energy at all, you see? And if I'm motivated to do it for myself, then I will. So the basic attitude is, what's in it for me? The basic motivation for a Vaishya person is personal gain. It'll make me famous. It'll make me rich. It'll get me the respect of the neighborhood. I mean, it doesn't have to be entirely material values, but it's always something about myself. And so some people, who appear to be altruistic, often are not really altruistic, in the sense that they're doing it as with a Vaishya consciousness. Even some people who are on the spiritual path and are doing a lot of kriyas are still doing it not out of love for God, but what I'm going to get from it. I'll do a lot of kriyas and then I'll get a lot of realization, won't I? I'll meditate a lot and then I'll be thought of as a really good devotee, won't I? Or just in one way or another, it's not really selfless love for God. It's still Vaishya. And I often end up talking about the caste system as this transition from Vaishya to Kshatriya, because that's a key point, and we'll talk about that more tomorrow. The response to suffering for a Vaishya is to avoid pain by controlling the outer environment. I have enough money. I have a big enough house. I bought the house next door to me so I can make sure that I have the right neighbors. My kids are going to go to the colleges that I want them to go to. My wife behaves in a certain way. My husband behaves in a certain way. I'm going to control the world around me. And often, of course, what cracks the Vaishya point of view is when that world spins out of control. Which is why sometimes when people lose their money, they kill themselves. Because their money has been the way they have controlled the world, protected themselves from suffering. They can't imagine how they're going to protect themselves from suffering if they can't control the world with their money. Whereas other people who are living more from the inside, it's an inconvenience, that's a certainty, to lose all your money. But it doesn't destroy my basic worldview. And so it's not merely that such people are materialistic, it's that the way they avoid suffering is using the power of money to control the world. And without that, they're devastated. But of course, you lose your money, as an example, and you discover that there's another kind of life, and then you begin to progress, and that's how it happens. The relationships of a Vaishya person are symbiotic, which is they're self-protective, but they're willing to trade. If you scratch my back, I will scratch yours. I will do these things for you. You will do these things for me. It's a deal. You know, Vaishya relationships are where both partners write down what all the chores are and divide them exactly equally, just to make certain that nobody does more than anybody else. And the Vaishya is always watching to make sure that nobody is taking advantage. That I will give, but I'm only going to give what I'm supposed to. This is what you're supposed to do. This is what I'm supposed to do. And such relationships can work. It can work like that, but you can see it doesn't have the transcendent sweetness that we get to when we start talking about Kshatriyas and Brahmins, which we're going to do tomorrow. So that will be our morning. We'll see you tomorrow, and we'll finish this subject. God bless you.